Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
All right, we're back. It's fall. More. It's fall. It's fall.
Stop promising people that. It's false fall.
It is false fall, but you know what? It was a nice false fall.
It was.
You know what? I went out walking a dog late at night. Yeah. It was chilly. It was nice.
Yeah, it was like actually chilly if you're out late enough or up
shorts.
Early enough.
I went out at 1:30 in the morning. It was nice.
Do you walk the dog at 1:30 in the morning?
I walked the dog at 1:30 in the morning.
Okay. Yeah.
I was the only one in my neighborhood out. It was actually really nice.
Yep.
A little creepy.
Except for Slender Man. He's always watching you.
I mean, that's true.
Walking his slender dog.
Well, let the homeowners association know about that.
Yeah.
You can never warn them about Slender Man. They never believe
you. Get two letters from the HOA. We've looked into Slender Man, and we don't think he's real. Signed the Slender HOA.
Slender Dog, however, we do know that's real, and beware.
Yes. Watch out for a Slender Dog. Anyway, yes, it was cool out at night, and yep. I believe that's not still the case.
No, we're back.
Right, we're going back
out.
'90s. It's so awful. I'm gonna head out for a week to Port Aransas
and leave
this to y'all.
That's right.
But in the meantime, we got a bunch of like stuff in,
games,
including a restock, notably on the D&D Player's Handbook, which we've had come in twice, had sell out twice.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a nice, what may be the final batch of the alternate cover, which is the kind of the one that everybody wants, you know, especially once it's gone.
Yeah.
And so that's a get it while it's hot kind of thing.
For sure.
Obviously, the regular version will come back at some point, but that is something we're waiting on, too. So this could be it for a little while.
Yeah, it did really well. We got what is a pretty significant restock for us. It was actually the same amount we ordered initially. So
yeah, we were not prepared for how much people were ready for it, and it seems like it's gone over quite well.
We expect it will last a week.
Yeah.
If current trend.
So get your D&D books.
Yeah, recommended. And you'll be able to, for years, lord the variant cover over your friends.
Well, Dave and I were flipping through it. He was showing me some of the cool artwork in there. I like that they have like actual D&D players shown. To, like,
yeah. Early on when they're teaching you the first 20-30 pages showing the mechanics, they have this kind of cool image where it's almost like two-tiered. And on one tier, you've got the actual players at the table, which kind of look like fun, normal people. And then above them, you kind of see what they're imagining in the sequence. And there's like one where they're all like sort of gasping, and you can see that the DM has like rolled some very bad, probably a natural 20 on a trap or something going off. And although I know that's not how traps work. But anyway... but something has happened, and they're all gasping at it.
The imagery is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's another page that shows, like, you know, here's somebody making a 14 on a roll, a 20 on an attack roll on, like, a gelatinous cube,
and
a one on clearly trying to jump over a trap.
Oh, you fall to your doom by just, you know, impaling yourself on spikes.
And there's a lot of good artwork in it. Those ones are kind of only in the early areas, but... You know, one of the other ones that jumped out for me is the, what do they call it? Ancestries, I think, now? Not backgrounds, but ancestries.
Yeah.
So, like, if you... Or no, maybe it's not ancestries.
It's like
it is your background, because it's like, you know, I was a sailor, or
yeah,
I was an...
Oh, man. It's
got a term for it.
Yeah.
I can't think of it.
Well,
it's
people yell it out, and we will hear you through the power of digital.
But
right.
But they're cool. They're like little scenes of like whatever
it's
area
like,
you're
it's
from.
It's like a background piece of art. So if you're like a thief, it shows you an area, like there's this kind of widescreen painting of like the city, and it's like the...
It's like a gambler's den.
Yeah, the slums and gambler's den and stuff like that. And if you're a sailor, you know, it's going to show you like a portside town. They're all places, and they look really cool. They give you a flavor for where your character would have come from and been hanging out and stuff like that.
Yep.
And it was unpredictable. I hadn't seen them do anything like that before. So yeah, lots of that's just purely the visual stuff. Obviously, people are generally digging a lot of the mechanical upgrades and updates.
But visuals are important.
They are.
The full page artwork for each class was really cool.
Yes. Yeah. They have like everybody gets a splash page painting for their class and a cool little one line descriptor. You know, like powerful. you know, was it like Agents of Nature or something like that for Druids?
I don't know who the artist is, or I'm sure they've got quite a few in-house artists, but they're all good.
There was a little bit of variety of style so that it's not all just one thing, which, you know, I really like, say, Wayne Reynolds, who's done a lot for them and more for Pathfinder, But he was a specific style for an era, and it is. I am pleased to see a little bit more variety now.
Agreed.
So. What else we got?
So, also in the D&D vein, the guys do the Ultimate Guide to Alchemy,
right?
And a few other things. They've done like settlements and other stuff. They did a new book called Ultimate Guide to Foraging, which is like nature stuff and you know, finding natural cures. You play a druid or a ranger.
Yep.
You might want this book. They also came out with these magic item compendiums. So all the stuff they've done, these ultimate magic items, they're these big cards you give out that are like the magic items.
They're like tarot size.
They're like tarot size, yeah.
Nice.
And then sort of smaller, they have the magic item generators, which have all the like various components of a magic item. So you can sort of shuffle up and create a magic item on the fly.
Oh, that's pretty cool. That is a neat idea. Neat.
Yeah. We've got Heroescape, an old school terrain miniatures fighting game kind of thing.
The new edition of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Renegade Games did that.
Yeah. We got the base set and then there are two supplements.
I know that people have a lot of love for it already. Like for the previous edition. Some guy was in just earlier today lamenting that he had sold the previous one. But I think he used to play with his kids and his kids have gone off to college or whatever, and so he can't quite justify buying the new one. But he may break. We'll see. You know what's cool about those boxes? There's some of those boxes where you can lift up the front cover, it unvelcros. You can lift it up and look at the cool terrain and heroes and villains and stuff inside and monsters. Yep. It's always been a cool looking game. I think it's one of those kind of games that is kind of, I feel like, perfect for like, I don't know, like, I'm going to say 10 to 16 feels like a perfect age. I would have gone apeshit for this.
Yeah.
Because it's... it's cool fantasy combat and exploration and stuff like that.
So there's a game called Finca, which is from Pandasaurus Games. Made a bunch of good games. This is based in Majorca, you know, the place where the orcas are sinking yachts.
Yes.
Is a place of golden beaches and light blue sea, and it's a resource management of like almonds, oranges, lemons, figs, and you're like getting requests from the island community and getting your donkey carts ready to deliver. And so it's like it's a resource management set in Majorca.
Okay.
Very, very pretty.
So this is like island resources and stuff like that.
It says that the resources are collected using a Moncala-like mechanic. I was looking up to see what game is Moncala.
I remember it being a popular game.
It's a game.
I for sure heard of it.
Yeah. I don't know what that mechanic means.
I
feel as a gamer I failed you all.
Yep.
Maybe it's a. It's.
I'm gonna look it up at Board Game Geek while we continue to converse.
You do that. We got a game called Circus Flocati, which is.
I'm sorry. Say again.
Circus Flocati.
Oh, okay.
You collect ads from the flea circus to score points.
Okay.
So yes, you're building
ads.
You're building a flea circus.
Of course.
So this is the guy from Jurassic Park's original, because he did a look at the
That's
fleas.
That's right. He did
a flea circus. Servitor.Murrow's
I can hear his thick Scottish accent. He's like, "That was just so wonderful, and that people could swear that they see them." And
There's a new version of a game called Millions of Dollars, which is a hidden role game where you're like the mastermind, the driver, the snitch. It's like a post heist.
That's fun
game. It's a new second edition of that. A game called Codus Naturalis, which I don't know what that means. It is a manuscript. Okay. You are compiling a manuscript of overlapping pages revealing plants, animals, and fungi. So you're continuing the work of the illuminating monk Tibor Quelin.
And sometimes that opens the gem.
Sometimes games sound weird.
Sometimes.
But this game is pretty well ranked on BGG. Sounds like kind of a fun idea.
Yeah.
Then we have the new Pathfinder Arena, which is a Pathfinder-themed board game. I think you're just a fighting arena game.
Yeah.
It's got a bunch of expansions in it.
They've done several Pathfinder card games and things like that, so it's come from a pretty good pedigree.
Yeah.
Let me know when you're ready for the Moncala update.
Oh, please, tell me the Moncala of it all.
This actually sounds pretty cool. This is an ancient game, one of the oldest games in existence, basics of it. Dating back to ancient Egypt.
Oh, okay.
But they say Moncala is a family of two-player turn-based strategy board games played with small stones, beads, or seeds, and rows of holes or pits in the earth a board or other playing surface. The objective is usually to capture all or some set of the opponent's pieces. Now, without going into detail, it looks a little bit like an ancient version of Go or something like
that. Yeah, okay.
I'm sure that is not the same mechanics, but just that the, you know, that sort of, I saw something about, like, encircling your opponent and things like that. So it seems like that is something of the nature of it.
Okay.
And it's an ancient game, and we really should have known that. Some people are yelling at us now. Leave us alone.
You really play the human-sized chess game or Mancala. Those are the only choices back in history.
So yeah, then I want to mention a thing we're doing with Stellis Brewery down on Metric Boulevard.
Yes.
We've been partnering with Third Level Brewing, still are, for, like, our gaming nights. Yeah. They approach us. We're going to do a graphic novel book club once a month. That starts a week from, as you're listening to this today. And so it's every third Wednesday. So next week on the 18th, I think we're starting at like 7 o'clock. The first selections are Watchmen, Dark Knight Returns, and Batman Year One.
All of them?
You can read one, two, or all three.
Oh, goodness.
So I want to give people options, because that way someone doesn't go, oh, I don't like that book, I'm not coming this month.
Right.
This way, you can be like, oh, I'm going to come talk about and talk about this one I like, and shit-talk the other two.
Just
kidding.
To...
Please don't do that.
More like suck men.
But I figured we'd start off with some of the notable...
classics?
The big classics. So next month is Halloween, so we'll have some spooky-themed books.
Yep. Randy, you are running the...
I am running the
thing?
Yes. Yep. Also, if you like beer, you get $5 like Stellis Whites while you're there.
Yep. Nice. And I don't remember if this is for that or something else, but I believe they picked up some of our Owlbear coins to do for
that is for their Magic Knights.
Magic Knights. I knew they had some kind of cool prize support in the in the queue there. So yeah, keep these guys on your radar and come join us for that.
Yep. And you can find all their info on the Stellis Brewery, but also we're sharing them as they put the events up. So
nice.
All right. Let's talk about comics for the week.
Okay. All right.
It's actually not a super huge week for new stuff.
There's some notable
ones.
But
it's a notable week. And yeah, there are some notable ones. Let's start with Avengers Assemble.
Avengers Assemble was one that you had been looking forward to, Randy, because it's kind of a throwback Avengers in a way.
Yes.
But they kind of set it up in a neat way. It's not just like retro for no reason. Very specifically during the Blood Hunt event where vampires ran around the world terrorizing people, Cap put together a emergency sort of strike force to be mobile and move around and help out.
Yep.
And that inspired them to have like a kind of specifically like this emergency response Avengers.
Yep.
And it's a mixture of some older and newer, I guess I'll say, characters, but it's at the mansion.
The thing, it's at Avengers Mansion with Jarvis, like little old school.
Yeah.
And the initial team here is Cap, Monica Rambeau, who I refuse to call Photon.
You're going to be that guy, Randy?
Shang-Chi and Wasp.
Cap calls her Photon, so you have to.
I know. No, I don't.
But there's others, right. Somewhat fun and obscure characters that show in the first issue, but they're not, like, a little late for the main mission.
Right. So as those four are dealing with a supernatural threat, a card game starts up with, like, guys sitting around the mansion table. It's like Hawkeye, Living Lightning from the West Coast Avengers, She-Hulk, Julie Power from Power Pack, who I think looks a little younger here than last time we saw her.
Well, what are we guessing? She's like, didn't she talk about being in college?
She's in college.
Yeah. Right, so she's like 19 or 20.
Was she the one
in
Runaways? Or was that the other one? No, that was, it was Julie Power.
I think it was. Yeah. Yes.
It seemed like they may be quietly not doing that. But also, Hercules shows up. A lot of my favorite,
you leave out Wonder Man?
And Wonder Man.
That's actually quite a big team and a few powerhouses. When you have Hercules and Wonder Man on the team, you can carry some stuff around.
This felt a little old school to me, and I can see where some people may not enjoy that, but I was looking for old school Avengers, and so I was pretty happy with this.
You know, Randy, because we talked about it off air, one of my favorite bits is... Well, first of all, I like the poker game thing. I like that they could, character downtime is something that is
team
always
needed.
That. Yes, it's like if they're just running around from one death of the universe threat to the next, it's just exhausting, and you want to see the characters, you know, have a baseball game. And so them having playing some cards in this was fun. There's a great bit where Wonder Man is talking to Julie Power.
Yep.
And she mentions having seen one of his movies, and she's like, "Are you a fan?" And he's like, she's like,
My
dad,
dad
is. Yeah. And he's got this great look on his face, like, yeah. But yeah, that was a fun one.
Yeah. We've got the latest from the Ashes, Wolverine number one, Saul DeMid, who's been writing, what has he been writing?
Miles Morales.
Miles Morales, yeah.
Wolverine is so feral in this. He's literally running with a wolf pack when it begins.
Sure. Yep.
He is, like, detached from humanity. He's got kind of, I want to say, both good and bad people looking for him. Nightcrawler is out to try and kind of, like, bring him back home a little bit, bring him back to a little bit of more humanity. And then there's a bad person. I'll go ahead and... It's not like a huge character, but I'm not going to blab it anyway. But he's also being hunted by this... Wolverine's being hunted. And forces are going to meet.
Yep. It's a sort of an older villain. It's an older Wolverine villain come back.
Solid first outing. Really nice artwork, I thought.
Yeah, really nice, yeah.
Like, also, the homeboy can draw a wolf. Yep. I'll tell you that.
If you like these cover books that DC occasionally does...
You know, like all the printing all the variant covers in one comic?
There is a Nightwing variant covers book. David, you pick up a fair amount of these.
I get most of them. I don't know if there's any that in particular that I've missed unless it's some super lame character.
Nightwing in particular has had some great covers.
Yeah, Bruno Redondo, but there's a bunch of other good ones in here. Here's a variant cover by Jim Lee, who doesn't do a lot of art except for covers and stuff these days. But, there's like, just as a random example, some of the covers in here, there's a nice... double page. This must have been a front and back cover that shows Nightwing through the ages. So it's got him from being Robin to the popped collar first year of Nightwing, his 90s sort of mullet up through modern versions. Oh, it even has when he was Batman for a little while. That's super cool. I love the one that has the kind of like the formal wear for the Teen Titans in it, where they're all kind of dressed like I don't know, for a cover for Vanity Fair or something like that. There's a Nightwing booty cover that was that one of the variants. A
couple of those.
Yep.
There are some with Bitewing in them.
Yep. There's a Nightwing out with some people for dim sum. If you've been seeing these covers, you know how good that they've been. I recommend it. It's good stuff.
By the way, there's a little... I didn't realize there's a little bit of... like three or four story pages.
Yeah.
Because Barbara's like putting together... pictures for Bloodhaven magazine.
They have been doing this in all of them. I kind of don't like it. It's a framing device story, but I'm like, instead of doing framing together. Device, give me a few extra covers.
Mm-hmm.
I know there were some in there. Where's a chibi Nightwing?
but this, it's a great cover book.
Yeah.
Some notable number twos this week. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number two.
People have been waiting for this.
Yeah, and I feel like it's running a little late.
Wasn't it like we knew there was a gap between issue one and two, I think, right?
Yeah.
I think it was planned. I don't know if it was the best idea, but anyway, each of the first four issues is going to focus in on a different turtle, and it's Mikey's turn.
I dubbed this the best comic of the week.
This is really good. Raphael Albuquerque does a great job. Michelangelo, Nick kind of nailed it. This is basically Michelangelo has become Johnny Cage from Mortal Kombat.
Yep. So where like Raphael kind of, that was Raphael in the first
year. Yeah, he was in a gritty prison drama.
He kind of turned towards his, you know, it focused in on his anger and his stuff. He had like...
Well, he went like... pure vigilante.
He was like, in pure vigilante mode, hunting people like in a prison. He let himself get put in. And then this one also expresses Michelangelo's personality.
Well, it's kind of interesting that the turtles are basically not together anymore.
Right.
They're at odds with one another.
And surely they will probably in issues five and six or something back together.
I'm sure.
Yep.
But yes, there's animosity. The party dude has kind of become the toast of the town, played out party dude.
He's moved to Japan.
Yep. And he's in like a show that looks a little like Power Rangers-ish or something like that. Kind of being like doing stunt martial arts, occasionally accidentally smacking the stunt guys with his nunchucks a little too hard.
There's just some interesting thought process that Jason Aaron goes into. And gives
it is actually like a sort of a deeper than usually they go with Johnny Cage as he kind of wrestles with, he's like, am I happy? Am I doing what I want to do? There's a great scene early on where he's at this like really classy dinner and getting like the best of the best food, and he's like this isn't though the best food I've ever had. And then he like does a flashes back and it's him down in the sewers with his brothers eating pizza.
It's
a really beautiful piece of art on it too, and so it's pretty thoughtful like that. And now there's people coming for him too.
Yeah, it was a really good issue. And just simple but executed.
Is he in the best of shape to handle a problem like that? Well, maybe not.
Maybe not.
Mentally and physically.
Right. Jason Aaron. It seems like each issue he's doing a lot of thinking to get into whoever that turtle of choice is into their world and what it might look like if they almost go a little too far into whatever their thing is.
I'm super excited for the next issue because it's Leonardo, who's my favorite turtle.
Is it Joel Johns or Chris Burnham?
No, it's Chris Burnham.
Okay.
That'll be good. Really Every cool. artist has been good.
I did miss it in number one because I forgot. The Distillery has a new one called Time Waits, number one. On
MSN. Oh, yeah. That's Chip Zdarsky's...
kind of time travel Black Ops book.
The way I read it is when I was making the sign for it, and I think I read just enough to confirm this. A dude who comes from the future on some mission, he basically kind of goes native, gets married, kind of wants to get out of whatever mission he was doing, and then like a Black Ops team from the future is like, go finish his mission, oh, and also kill him probably, yeah. Like get him taken care of. And he's trying to like live a normal life and just be done with it all. So it'd be almost like if Reese had come back in Terminator times and he's like, hey, I just want to live with you, Linda Hamilton, and we'll just get out away from the Terminator and we'll just avoid it. And then still things came looking for him.
There's also Dead Eyes, The Empty Frames. This is a... Dead Eyes was a sort of crime miniseries that Jerry Dugan did with John McCrae.
Yeah.
It's been a while. They originally came out with something else like Dead Rabbit, and they got sued by the bar.
Oh, that's right.
This is the third, I think.
This is the third one. And I read it, and so I, on a whim, read this, and I'm like, it's really good. You don't have to read any other stuff. All you know is Dead Eyes is this, like... sort of legendary criminal.
Yeah, he's infamous. He's he usually goes after...
He wears a mask with red eyes.
Red X's over his eyes. It's pretty simple setup. But the
setup for this is there was an art heist a long time ago. These sort of numbnuts idiots lucked into buying or stealing like $500 million worth of paintings.
Okay.
That they cut out of these frames in a museum, and the museum still has the frames empty. They want them back. And he maybe have a line on like stealing them all back for the museum.
But he wants his cut too.
It's an interesting little crime story. I like it quite a bit, actually.
Yeah.
And McRae's art is fantastic.
What's the personality of this guy?
Kind of an ass. Yeah, kind of an asshole. Danny Ocean-y type guy, very arrogant.
A little more violent than Danny.
A little more violent than Danny Ocean, but yes. But he is kind of he's an underworld legend kind of guy.
Let's talk about the other number two that was really good.
Johnny Quest number two.
I'm really enjoying this series.
It's fun. The big twist of the first issue was that the Johnny Quest team from the 60s winds up in 2024 dealing with like a 70-year-old Johnny Quest.
Yeah.
And their nemesis, Dr. Zin.
Zin is somehow still around.
And they're trying to figure out a way to get back in time before they screw up the time stream.
There's some cool other characters that show up in this. I like all like the technology explanations. Yep. And it's just a fun idea done well.
It's well done.
Yeah. I think this is Joe Casey. Yeah, Joe Casey.
Okay. Good job, Joe Casey.
Uncanny X-Men number two. This
Gail Simone's X-Men book.
Introduces those characters that we saw at the end of the previous issue.
Yep.
Introduces a new character into Charles Xavier's life who's going to tie into all of this.
Yeah, it's an interesting... It's a flashback. It's like to Xavier's early days that will end up connecting with the present in some ways. But yeah, this is the team that has like a Rogue and Gambit and Wolverine on it. And possibly some new people.
Yep.
Oh, that's right. There's also some skullduggery going at the X Mansion, which has been turned into a prison.
Yep.
The person who's running that is like messed up.
Yep.
They clearly need to get smacked down.
One of
notable character returns, who's I think people know this character, but I don't want to say who it is though.
Yeah.
I was talking about another one that happens earlier at the prison. I was sad to see her.
Yep. But yeah, it's a good issue.
Yeah, it's a good one. I love David Marquez's artwork.
Blood Hunters, the miniseries that has like Bloodstone and
Dagger.
And what's that?
Dagger.
Dagger and what's her name? Halloween Mask Lady.
Oh, Hallow's Eve.
Hallow's Eve. There's a weird team. They're fighting the new vampire uprising.
And Miles Morales.
And Miles Morales, who's a vampire now.
Since I was reading that like Spider-Man clone comic that has Hallow's Eve in it, she's like a straight outlaw in that. Like Bonnie and Clyde, she's Bonnie.
Comics don't talk to each other, Dave.
This is like she's on a team of heroes here. She's definitely Robin places in the other one.
But here's the thing. Bloodstone is like a murderess. Like they're like heroes.
Yeah, that's true. She might be like,
Dagger's a hero.
But you know, as long as you don't smoke the pots in front of her, she won't.
That's right.
They go after drug dealers.
Yes.
Miles is a hero.
Miles is a hero.
He's a vampire now.
Oh, is that... He's corrupted?
I don't know.
He's now the damned.
Nick. He is the damned.
Speaking of vampires, DC vs. Vampires World War V, number two, comes out. This is all in a sort of post... vampires have won, humans are like underground, and there's a shaky peace going on between them, and now there's a vampire civil war going on.
Okay.
Fantastic Four number 25 this week. This is a really good standalone issue of a book I've been really enjoying. It's got a romance angle to it and a science angle, and I found it to be a very satisfying standalone issue.
Cool. Ryan North. Yep. That is already a somewhat impressive run. That means he's been at it for two years. Yeah. 2 years in.
It might be a little bit longer because you have to pause for like crossovers and things like that.
That's true.
But Randy's basically wrong.
Okay. Sure.
That's really all I cared about in this.
Transformers number 12 hits its finale, or first right. story arc
There's
finale.
There's some big Ruthless Showdown stuff in here with, Devastator, Combaticons, Optimus, Soundwave, Shockwave.
There's a...
Wave. And a big decision made by Optimus Prime.
Sure.
And a big sequence with my boy Beachcomber. The greatest Transformer of them all.
Is he?
Yes.
He's the tiniest.
What do you consider the greatest? Someone who was some glorious military leader? Wars not make one great, Randy.
Bumblebee.
Blaster.
Whatever.
Blaster's pretty great.
He's fine. Can he surf? I doubt it.
He could break dance.
The final issue of Vengeance of Moon Knight, which wraps up the story of Moon Knight and Shroud, and is going to lead into the new Fish of Khonshu comic.
Okay.
And the latest issue of Batman Gotham by Gaslight, Kryptonian Age, which I know Nick and I both really enjoy.
It's really good.
Yeah, their take on Alan Scott is really interesting. They're Adam Strange, they're Wonder Woman. Like, this is a really neat... They're doing some really cool world building.
Who's the writer?
Andy Diggle,
yeah.
And it's got gorgeous art by Leandro Fernandez.
You know, Diggle is a good world builder. He is. As I'm sure we reminded people when this first came out.
Is this just a miniseries, or is this an ongoing?
It's a 12-issue miniseries.
Oh, it's 12-issue. Yeah, okay,
big miniseries.
Good.
But Diggle was like one part of the writing team that basically did the modern Guardians of the Galaxy and a lot of other good big sci-fi stuff. He did Legion of Superheroes stuff at DC. He's a good world builder.
Diggle did?
I don't know.
You're thinking of Dan Abnett.
They're English. They're the same person.
They're very different people.
Right. Diggle did the Adam Strange.
I mixed them up.
Yeah.
Right, and he did the Green Arrow Year One thing. Yeah. Yes. That was his big thing.
I was like, where are you going with this? Right.
I mixed up my Englishman.
Okay. Yeah, no, I it's funny because I don't think he was a particularly big world builder. I don't think it's not like I've seen.
True. That's true. So this may be actually kind of new territory for him.
He wrote one of the worst runs of Daredevil.
That is true.
Yeah. Well, you know, you can't win them all.
No, I'm
it was actually a little bit odd, I remember, at the time, because we were just like, we like this guy really quite a bit. Why is he not firing on Daredevil? He actually seems like a good fit.
It's one of those things.
Was that the Darklands or something?
Shadowlands,
yeah.
Some creators work better at different companies, and I think Diggle works better at DC.
It does seem to be the case.
I mean, Mark Waid works better at DC, minus his Daredevil run.
Yes, that's fair. That is fair.
And his Cap run back when?
And then we got a notable trade, the Ultimate Spider-Man Volume 1 trade.
It's like issues 1 through 6.
1 through 6.
Would it be? I think it's fair to say that is either the most or the maybe right next to like something like Transformers or something like that, our best-selling comic of last year. Was Ultimate Spider-Man.
Agreed.
It's just a fact. It just was the highest numbers that we had. So this finally hitting trade means that if you're a little bit late to the party, you can just dive right in. It is, although it's kind of got an original take on it, it is clearly inspired by the Spider-Verse stuff that had the older Peter Parker. Like, this is a Peter Parker who comes to it late in the game. He's married. He's got a kid. Two kids. And, y'all have been following it, and I have not, but I know that y'all have been liking it.
But the little twists and the world-building that Hickman is able to do of, like, Ben, who's still alive, and his relationship with J. Jonah Jameson.
They're friends, right?
They're friends. They're going on a business venture together. There's some really cool stuff. Even stuff with his kids is fun, and MJ and their relationship. It just... feels a little unique.
Right. I think people have been looking for a little bit of that in Spidey-Man's.
Yeah. And I had a couple of other issues
I wanted to mention. Go ahead.
I'm really enjoying, in the Ultimate Universe, I like Ultimate Black Panther, that sees its 8th issue. They're dealing with a war with Khonshu, which is fun.
Right.
Okay.
And then there was one other one that I wanted to mention. Oh, the finale to Scotty Young's Ain't No Grave.
Which, oh, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Kind of supernatural Western. Yep.
Lady who was dying and went to hell, went basically, to try and prevent it.
To kill death.
Yep.
We'll see what happens to her in this final issue.
Yep.
It was a good miniseries. I will probably pick it up. I thought Jorge Corona's artwork was pretty stunning.
Scotty Young, as writer, has turned out to be a pretty notable voice.
He has.
All right. Let's take a break, and then we're going to talk about a bunch of trailers and stuff that we've seen.
Trailers.
All right. We got a bunch of trailers to talk about. I hated most of them. And
love your positivity, Randy.
Randy's experiencing some trailer burnout, perhaps.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. But first, I want to mention a bit of news. I don't know if y'all saw this, that the Spider-Man 4 looks like it might actually be happening.
Yeah, I saw that. Tom Holland's
yeah,
gonna.
Yeah, there's
didn't they announce a director?
Daniel Cretton, who directed Shang-Chi,
yeah,
is in early talks to direct it. He was supposed to be directing the Kang Dynasty.
Yep.
And I wonder if this is sort of a, like,
we're sorry.
We're sorry. he also has been working on the Wonder Man miniseries, if that ever happens.
That film.
And also developing a sequel to Shang-Chi. It feels like this guy's been in development on a lot of things, which is why I think this is a grain of salt.
Yeah.
But I think Shang-Chi, for all that I know that it's not beloved, I thought it did its job pretty well. I think he could definitely direct a Spider-Man movie.
Yeah, I think so. That, sure. The tone of it was actually not wildly dissimilar.
No.
Like, it had a fair amount of humor to it, which I think is good for most Marvel movies, to be honest.
Yeah.
I feel like they all need a little bit of lightness to them.
But Tom Holland will be back as Spider-Man. That'll be fun. So, yeah.
Except for Winter Soldier. Winter Soldier probably didn't need too much lightness.
And it had lightness. There's some jokes.
Are there some
jokes? Yeah.
And then somebody gets machine gunned right
yes,
after it.
Exactly. All right. Let's talk about trailers.
Okay.
I'm just going to go in the order I have on the list, which is not the order in which we watch them.
Sure.
Okay. Let's start with Night Bitch, which is a great title.
Is it?
It is, if the movie is like a dark comedy.
It is a dark
comedy. Which I was going to say, this is
it? It looked more dark than comedy to me.
You know, no, there was definitely a vibe here that reminded me of... God, what was the movie it was making me think of? Like, it had elements of satire, like the Barbie movie or something like that. But
it's also...
So,
Dave, do you remember that weird-ass movie made by the Socialist that's about the... Thank you for
yes.
What is it? No Thank You for Calling or whatever it was called.
Yes, right.
And how weird and weird as shit that movie was.
Right. It was the one where they were breeding people into horses.
This looks like that to me, but not as interesting.
It's possible. So Amy Adams is what, single mom struggling to raise?
No, not a single mom.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
Yeah, she's
a mom.
Scoot McNairy plays her husband.
But
what's
maybe
that?
Scoot McNairy.
Oh,
who's been in a bunch
is.
Of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
But it does seem like, what, is there? There's some kind of disconnect with her husband.
She was an artist, and basically she became a stay-at-home mom, giving up her work.
Okay.
And it's sort of about that and how she is somehow turning into a dog.
It's also turning into a dog.
Right. This is, you know, this is the kind of story that is like sort of a, this is probably allegorical.
Yes.
Yes, even as she kind of goes through the, it looks like sort of the grind of taking care of kids and being that stay-at-home mom, there's a sort of a little inner animal that's coming out. She's chowing down on food animalistically. We see glimpses of her running on all fours wildly and stuff like that. I will say, like, it wasn't, like, super funny. It was kind of wryly comedic. Nick, are you gonna go see this?
Yeah,
you gonna...
I think it looks interesting enough, and I like Amy Adams. She doesn't like have a great track record of movies.
Does she not?
No.
Sometimes, I mean, she was Lois Lane in the Superman movies. She did that Arrival for Denis Villeneuve.
That was a big movie.
It was.
I was trying to think what her biggest movies were, like her biggest successes.
Enchanted.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That was like that one that sort of put her on the map.
So I had to look up the director for this. It's Maureen Heller, I believe, is who it is.
Okay.
She did that Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, the Tom Hanks
the Mr. Rogers
biopic, which is actually quite good.
Okay.
She worked on Queen's Gambit, and She's basically a director, and she's written a bunch of stuff, too. So I think this looks good enough.
So the thing we didn't mention is this, like, based on a well-known book?
Yes.
And I don't know anything about the book, so I feel unqualified to speak to the adaptation. But it wasn't... I don't know. It felt like... I wasn't getting the vibe of quality. Or, like, no, it looked okay, but, like, it didn't hook me with it. I think you've got a sort of a fun and sympathetic premise... I'm gonna let you be the canary in the coal mine there, Nick.
I usually am. Yes. I live there. I live in that coal mine.
You've survived the coal mine.
It's called Press Play. There's a big giant sign on it, and I just
At no point has the mine filled with poisonous gas and killed you yet.
I mean, it's filled with poisonous gas. It hasn't killed me yet.
Right. You come staggering out, and you're like, "I'm okay.
I'm okay." Most of the time. There were a couple of close calls recently, though.
A bit of an odd title, Night Bitch.
Yep.
What is the 30 Rock thing that people were remarking?
Bitch Hunter.
Yes. Anyway.
Having seen this trailer.
Yes.
And having watched 30 Rock.
Yep.
I would much rather see a Bitch Hunter movie than this movie.
Wasn't Bitch Hunter supposed to be like this super misogynistic?
It was a parody, It was Will Ferrell was playing the Bitch Hunter.
The titular
Bitch
Hunter.
The titular.
All right, what else do we have?
Alien Earth. Is not a trailer.
Which is 5 seconds.
It was actually not even a teaser trailer.
No.
It was like, here's the logo and like an alien.
I think this is essentially saying it's actually coming. That's what it is.
Right. Which, because Romulus is out, I think it's probably a good time to say, hey, there will also be a show soon.
And this is...
We've been talking about this for years.
Yeah.
But this is Aliens on Earth. Yes. Something they've always talked about, never seen.
And it's also...
Yeah, the first time I saw it was when it happened in an Avengers comic a few weeks ago. So they've taken their sweet time. These dudes have been around since the 1970s. Disco was popular when Aliens were invented.
That's true.
And they still haven't done an Aliens on Earth story.
But you didn't know, H.R. Geiger, huge disco fan.
I love it. we should be fair, and I know somebody is saying it right now, in the original Dark Horse comics, they did it.
Yeah.
So, okay, we know.
But the notable thing about this one is it's Noah Hawley who did Legion
and
Fargo.
Fargo.
And some of the best TV on TV.
The people involved and the notion of telling an alien story in a sort of more long format like you can do on TV, all things that interested me.
Yeah.
I'm at least open to it. This micro teaser logo trailer thing
Xenomorph
did not have any particular effect on my interest one way or the other, but there it is. It's coming soon-ish.
But I have learned recently that I'm an alien whore, and I'm okay about that.
Yes, you do have the alien whoredom in you.
I do.
We saw a trailer for 2073.
This is a hard movie to describe because it's like a documentary /
But David says it's not a documentary.
Right.
It's more important than Bat Dave.
But it's kind of a documentary. So, I believe, you know, watching this, if you are at all concerned about the state of the world right now and things like environmental collapse, the global rise of fascism and things like that, you will watch this trailer and be re-depressed because it really leans into the fact that that will decimate the Earth by, like, the year 2073.
Yep.
And, but here's the interesting thing that you looked up, Nick. Apparently inspired by, I believe, the same 1960s short film that also inspired 12 Monkeys. I have to look this up later to make sure, but I'm nearly certain it is.
Yeah,
I don't speak Francais, so your guess is as good as mine.
No parlez-vous Francais?
But someone comes back from the year 2073 to try and avert things or warn us, and I'm like, well, I think the people who care know.
Yeah.
We just can't convince the people who don't care. Maybe he has a future laser, and he's like, well, if you don't care, pew pew.
Have y'all ever been at a party or like a get together or something, and you start talking to someone who you mostly agree with,
but they're morose as fuck?
By the end of their conversation, you want to strangle them because they're so annoying.
Yeah,
that's the experience I have watching this trailer.
I get it. I need to hear that it's really good or for it to prove itself in some way before I'd want to watch it, because it looks like what I would think of as misery porn.
Yep.
Yeah. This guy is a notable like documentary filmmaker. He's done a lot. He did one on Amy Winehouse that I feel like was very well received.
Okay, I've heard that's good. I'm not quite sure how you, like, given that premise, I don't know how you make a trailer But like, well, we didn't, weirdly, we didn't even see this character, did we, or did we?
A little tiny bit at the end,
It is presented, like, it looks like a documentary because it's showing all clips of real people.
It's played, it's
like, you're going to see, like, Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk and Trump and, like, all these people, but, like, there's not really a sense of a narrative, more of a sense of the world is spiraling to destruction.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah. Either you already know, or this movie's not going to convince you. Either way, this looks very annoying to me.
I am curious to see, like, if this guy in this story feels he can somehow change things, or maybe he's just desperate to. Does it have something to say in that portion of it?
I mean, also, a lot of people have to work through their things, and if you're a filmmaker, I mean, you have to work through your feelings somehow. This is how they do it.
Right.
Whether it comes across I will
put my fears and terrors on screen and see if it connects. I mean, that is how a lot of things get made. You're not wrong. We may be watching just his Wankfest catharsis, but his Wankfest catharsis could be well done.
It's true.
It is definitely a kind of a... Because I don't want to see a movie that's just misery porn. I was worried about that with the movie Civil War. I have not seen it yet, and although I know it is dark, I gather it has some other interesting things to say and was not just what I thought it was.
Correct.
So perhaps the best case scenario, that's what 2073 will be. Nick, are you going to go see it?
I probably won't see it in theaters.
More of a streaming kind of option.
If I can find it online somewhere, I probably will.
All right.
You need pirate it.
Sure. That fits with the
themes. How we're going to get to 2073, yep. Nick.
It wasn't
That's the worst thing.
It wasn't 2073, but this may be the trailer where I determined that everyone who makes trailers is fired now.
Yep.
This is the trailer for The Wolfman.
Okay.
I'm very excited about The Wolfman. This is Leigh 1L, who did Invisible Man, which I loved.
He wrote and directed it, and he's the co-writer of a lot of the James Wan Insidious
stuff.
He's
done a lot of stuff I really like. I like every bit of horror that he's done.
Yep. And you liked his sci-fi thing.
Didn't he do Upgrade? Wasn't that him too?
He did do Upgrade.
Like, I really like Leigh 1L. And so him doing The Wolfman, I'm like, oh, that looks interesting. This trailer tells me almost nothing.
Right.
It is a teaser trailer.
Yeah.
Clearly there's a family who look like they're kind of... I don't know if they're like in some rural area or vacationing or what, but they seem a little isolated, don't you think? They're not in the big city, that's for sure. And they see something scary, and there's a dad, can you protect us? I was watching, I'm wondering if it's going to be a little bit about, like, themes of fatherhood and protection. I did see somebody who I think had done a little bit of the frame-by-frame kind of, like, super close look, and they were like, I think I can predict the plot from this, which is pretty wild, because they saw one or two things. I don't want to say what it is, because I think they were kind of, they could be right. About what they said, and I was like, well, that actually sounds like an interesting story. It is not very clear at all in this trailer, but if it is what they are surmising it is, then I think it will actually have a story to tell. But right now, it was mostly, hey, I think I hear something in the darkness, sound of rustling, close up on claws, growl, like...
The thing is, like, I don't want to know that much going into it.
Right.
But I think that this seems to hit the weird balance of, like, you're telling me things I don't actually don't want to know right now, and not telling me not to make other people want to see it.
I agree with Randy. Like, this is a bad trailer.
It's a bad trailer.
You know, I thought it was all right. But I think that was maybe partially informed by having seen that person's guess about it. because I feel like I maybe know one or two things you guys don't.
I might need to look, because my interest in this is...
Dave knows things about wolves.
I like Leigh 1L.
Well, here's the thing. There is, like, zero chance that he's going to completely fumble it. No. The worst he could do is not live up to expectations and do something just, I think, solid or good.
Yeah.
But he doesn't really do movies that are just, like, throwaways. I think this is bad first teaseritis. You know, that thing where, like, sometimes they go too generic. They're just like, oh, well, we just want to get people excited. There's a new Wolfman movie.
Yeah.
Just like The Invisible Man. It's more about, like, even just saying this is a property that is about to exist.
Yeah.
I'm waiting
But I don't know why they don't want to at least have a little more story hook. I don't get it.
Somehow these are all going to fit together, and it's going to be, like, Elizabeth Moss is Invisible Woman now.
You think it's going
to be the cinematic universe that we all wanted?
Yeah. Well, this is going to be... They tried to do that.
With the other universe monsters.
They could just give it to Leigh 1L and see what he can do with it.
I don't think they're going to do that.
I think it's probably not a good idea, but I would be vaguely interested to see how somebody who takes it seriously and who did The Invisible Man as an allegory for, like, stalking and spousal abuse,
well,
really.
This one clearly is going to be an allegory, well, because it's like it's a dad and a daughter, and there's some elements.
There's some
there.
Sort of family relationship thing going on there that's going to be part of it. Not exactly what you look for in your action-packed cinematic universes, but yes, what if the Wolfman met the lady from The Invisible Man?
Yeah, Elizabeth Moss.
It just kills her.
Invisible Woman.
It just kills her.
No, she that suit gave you, like, super strength and stuff. So.
Oh, that's true, that's true. The Invisible Man, and that killed a lot of people.
So, when Alice Billy is in the cinematic universe, we're going to get Wolfman, Invisible Woman, and Upgrade Dude.
Yes.
And also the old lady psychic from Insidious.
They need to call Upgrade Dude Upgrade.
His name is Upgrade.
They're like, are we in? Are you in on this upgrade? Yeah, like, come on, Invisible Man.
Yeah.
Except Invisible Woman, maybe. Yeah. By the way, I think if there's one thing we want people to take away from our description of this, go see the Invisible Man movie.
Yes, Invisible Man is really good.
It's quite good. It's thriller that has some scariness and maybe some trigger warnings for people who've been in those kind of, like, abusive relationships. But it's well handled and some pretty satisfying twists and turns in it.
Also, go see if you haven't seen The Insidious.
Yeah, you're giving them the Lee Whannell hits. And yes, so the Upgrade is probably the dark horse, the one people know least, Randy. What was the premise of Upgrade? I saw it, I liked it, but a guy was in an accident and...
It was like a computer program that gets implanted in his head, or like an AI, but it, like...
Does he have any robot parts?
No, it's like just an implant.
It's just feeding signals to him.
Yeah, but the thing, like, can take over his body and do a bunch of, like...
It can, like, force him to know kung fu and do stuff.
Yeah, but there's definitely a darker edge to it as well.
Right. It has some noirish elements. Anyway, Upgrade is also good.
Yeah, for sure.
Apparently they're doing a TV series of Upgrade.
Okay. We saw a trailer for It's What's Inside. This is the... If you guys ever go to a party and someone's like, hey, you want to put these things on and switch personalities amongst our bodies? And you're like, sure, I'll do that.
Oh, you know what? I thought this was an interesting trailer.
I did too.
I just don't think it's a good idea. I don't think I'd do it.
Well, no, I don't think it's a good idea, but...
But you're not one of that particular group of friends.
Yeah. But a bunch of 20-somethings who don't have a care in the world? Sure, they're going to do whatever the hell
they might have even been imbibing the alcohol or the pots.
It's true.
But they do look to... They're at, like, some kind of get-together or party or something like that. And somebody's like, I have to show you guys this...
Like, put away your phones.
He's like, this is going to get real or something like that. And they put on some kind of little sort of headset or thing on their heads that looks like it does a little bit of weird syncing up of their minds, possibly a little personality flipping thing. They, I don't think, had any idea that this was going to happen.
No. Nope.
And the rest of it
looks... It's a good lesson. Don't put electrodes on your head if you don't know.
Have you ever had an electrode on your head?
No, because I'm telling you, wouldn't do it.
I went to a sleep study. I did an electrode on my head.
I did
it's
too.
Fun.
First of all,
it's fun.
I don't believe either of you. I'm not putting electrodes on my head. I think Dave is Nick and Nick is Dave. You already switched personalities.
So just hit play, Randy.
Play. The movie that's... The movie this trailer reminded me of is that horror film that not too long ago that Talked to Me.
Yes,
where you put your hand
would be inhabited
on the thing
by like a spirit or something like that. But this
electrode thing is going to lead to some like crazy.
Right. I'm wondering if
people
like,
turning on each other.
Right? Are they like finding out their own darkest secrets about each other?
Yeah, because I couldn't quite tell if there was body switching or if there was like thought switching.
Right. Like, it was, and I actually sort of appreciate that in the first trailer. It looked intriguing, but didn't tell me so much that I kind of exactly know what's going on. There was also movies that have been like this would also include. Oh my God, what was that one with Ralph Fiennes in the 90s?
Strange Days,
where you could like record people's thoughts and then just replay them for entertainment in your head. And if you were like somebody might do some crazy thrill kill video and you played in your head and it's like, oh, it's like I got to kill. And there was also weird porn ones and stuff like that too.
That's what I'm saying. Don't put electrodes on your head, people.
It's coming.
All right,
in our dystopian,
but maybe
future.
A little bit. How else are we going to get to 2073 or whatever that movie was?
We're gonna put electrodes on our head and cause things.
Was this
an alternative dogs?
Was this movie made by anyone in particular?
I looked it up, and it was this fairly new guy. I think he's done like a couple of small shorts and
stuff. It's on my keep a watch on list.
I saw it's going to be on Netflix. I saw it posted that it was at. It did well at like South by Southwest and a couple of other.
Those guys will watch anything.
I mean, it's true.
I remain skeptical of Netflix original movies too. There have been exceptions,
I mean,
but
I think any streaming is going to have a lot of crap and a lot.
Which brings us to our next trailer.
What do we got?
Amazon Prime has an original movie called House of Spoilers.
House of Spoils, isn't it?
House of Spoils,
Spoils,
right.
Yes. This looks a little bit like The Menu meets...
Haunted House Things.
Haunted House Things.
Basically about a chef who opens up a new restaurant in kind of rural area.
Fine dining in a rural area, yep.
In a remote
it's the
kind
bear
of state.
Meets chef, or The Menu, I mean, meets whatever. But it seems like... Didn't they say that there's ingredients gathered like by some witch in the woods? Was that her?
No, there's a garden that was supposed to have been like
the witch's
garden created
by
a witch, because right. This house was inhabited by a witch.
So it is possible that you are making your fine dining from witch herbs.
Yeah,
and dark things happen. Yeah. And you know, at first, there's also, by the way, isn't this lady who's like doing all of this? She's like taking medications, like
yes.
A lot of prescription medication.
Yep.
And so I suspect there's going to be some of that blurring of like, oh, am I
is
seeing hallucinations?
Because
she like sees like she's serving some people this fine dining food and like a bug crawls out of it and she swats it. But clearly it wasn't really there.
Bug.
And yeah. They're just all looking at her like, what did you just do? You know, I think there is something in here. I don't know. The Menu is a great movie.
Yes.
And I think we would all recommend it.
The Menu also had a great trailer, by the way.
It did. But
the art of making a good trailer is tough.
I guess. I remember, I've seen so many good trailers for bad movies, and increasingly I'm seeing bad trailers for better movies, and it's frustrating.
Yeah.
I guess I'd rather, if we had to go one way, I guess I'd rather have bad trailers for good movies than good trailers for bad movies. But also serving a lot of bad trailers for bad movies, and I think that's what this is.
You lost me somewhere in there, but sure. This one is... Is this one a Netflix one?
It's Amazon.
Amazon, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know... you know, I like the horror genre. Was this Blumhouse?
It is.
Yeah.
All right, and I generally like...
Jason Blum.
Jason Blum's movies, so... I'll at least be keeping a watch on it. I'm curious enough, but... With the Menu out, it's it feels a little bit like it's maybe on its coattails.
A little bit, but you know, we're entering spooky season. A couple of random horror movies are.
I'll say this: it's not something that we've typically seen before.
Right, and horror movies are usually like panned or not panned, but a good of them don't hit like high
Metacritic
score or Metacritic or whatever. So I usually. Have a lower threshold for those things.
Right. And I'll say this, by the way, the Menu was more of a dark thriller than true horror. This one looks like it's at least wants to deal
this
potentially
is a ghost
have
story.
That. But it could also just be her hallucinations.
Right.
I'm guessing ghost.
I'm guessing hallucinations.
Oh.
I'm guessing it is the actual Blair Witch.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Randy's never gonna watch this.
Randy has the long shot on it. We could tell him it's gonna pay out, but he has to watch it.
Randy, have you already made your list of horror movies you're going to watch for this season?
I have a handful of things I want to watch. Late Night with the Devil. I want to watch Quiet Place Year One. There are a couple things
worthy,
on there.
Worthy outings, I think.
Yep.
All right. Let's. There's one or two trailers left.
There's one more trailer.
Oh, well, I know what it is.
Do you?
It's Minecraft.
Minecraft.
We are the target audience
Minecraft?
For Minecraft.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys know this about Minecraft. I don't know how many kids you have in your life. but kids like watching Minecraft videos. Kids like watching Minecraft videos so much that it will drive you to absolute madness. And they will tell you everything about those Minecraft videos. And it will be nonsense.
Could you tell me something about it?
I don't want to. But anyway, so it makes sense they'd be doing a Minecraft movie. And it looks just as surreal and weird as all the Minecraft videos I've ever seen.
It has a little bit of like, are those real? So they look like real people go to Minecraft World.
They go to Minecraft World.
Oh, so that makes a lot of sense. Do you know who directed this movie? It's Jared Hess, who did Napoleon Dynamite and Nacho Libre.
Okay.
And
that's interesting. I love Napoleon
Dynamite. That explains
Dynamite.
Why Jack Black is in there.
Yes.
Jack Black plays Steve, who is one of the like
iconic
Minecraft people. Yes.
Yeah.
There's Jason Momoa, which is weird.
Yep. He's wearing a very intense pink jacket.
Yep.
Emma Myers from Wednesday and a couple other things,
okay.
But she's really good.
They showed them doing like learning to like do the crafting in Minecraft. It looks like, you know, he's hammering away at something and, you know, forms a big old digital pixelated thing. And I don't know what happens in the movie. Well, there's like creatures and stuff, but I thought they were like zombies and stuff, and there were pig people in this. Is that a thing? People
instead of zombies, yeah. I don't know.
I mean, that game has been out for quite some time now.
Dave, I don't know what all's in Minecraft.
Is there a story in Minecraft? I thought you just built shit.
Because they make graphic novels of them. There clearly is enough that you can do a story.
I guess. I mean. All right. I am definitely. This is not my.
Yeah.
Oh, there's no way in hell I'll go see this.
Unless Aaron wants to see it.
Aaron don't want to see it. No, Aaron has passed. Thankfully, Aaron has passed his Minecraft phase. So he's not going
to
make me go see this.
If he was a few years younger, though, Randy, you might be going to see Minecraft.
Oh, I'd be going to see Minecraft. There are going to be so many parents who are like, I can't believe I have to go pay to see Minecraft when I spend 12 hours a day listening to Minecraft videos on my goddamn YouTube on the TV. Yes.
That's why they invented headphones.
It doesn't matter, because you know what happens when you put headphones on, Nick? Your kid comes over, motions for you to take the headphones off, and then explains to you what you missed in the last 25 minutes of Minecraft videos. I've seen some shit, Nick.
So we're going to go get Randy a drink and take a pause in the podcast there.
Yep, and then we'll be back, and I'll be calm, and there'll be no more Minecraft pigs.
Also, Matt,
we're going to put some electrodes on Randy's head.
Matt Berry and Jermaine Clement are in this.
It's probably going to be pretty fun. This is very much the Lego movie,
yeah. And there's some other elements to it. But
I never thought you could make a Lego movie, but they did that.
They did that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And two of them.
Anyway,
we'll see. Back in a minute.
Yep.
With.
All right, so I didn't get a chance not to watch it, but y'all saw Alien Romulus.
Yes.
And you're going to talk about it.
Well, it's one of those things where we originally were like, we don't want to see this.
I was definitely like, I actually believed people when they said that there's some good stuff in it.
Yeah.
I didn't think they were lying, but I was like, I don't want another some good stuff, but kind of mostly mediocre Alien movie. And so I was not planning to see it.
Then I watched Prometheus and Covenant, and I was like, okay, I can kind of.
You were able to plug into the world building stuff, yep. Having not previously when you
correct.
Watched it.
But I
you
hated were this Prometheus. Time. I'd never watched Covenant because I'd heard utter shit, and yep. I was like, it can't be good.
But you were in
there
the right.
There was a lot of good stuff.
You were in the right mood for it, and you enjoyed it. And then we had a friend who was mentioning that he wanted to see this movie, and we're just like, ah, screw it, let's just go see some alien stuff.
And seeing an alien movie on the big screen, it's kind of cool. It's been a while since
there had been, I saw Covenant on the big screen, and I felt like it hurt me a bit.
Prometheus was the
not
last
fully
one.
Recovered from it, to be honest. But this movie had a bunch of good stuff in it.
It did. It
like
it
so much
off.
So that even the things where it swerves wildly once or twice, and has even a few elements of like some Prometheus lore type stuff. I don't regret seeing it at all because the good stuff was so good.
Well, it kind of won me over really quickly with just, like, the opening. Like, there was an opening that has...
Actually, you know the very, very opening when they're just literally showing the logos?
Yeah.
Randy, they did that thing where the logo went, like, kind of digital, and it probably looked like old-school vector graphics from the original Aliens,
yep.
And it shook, like, a little bit, like, and I was like, oh, that's stupid. I'm like, this movie is going to stink, and it hasn't even started yet. But then, Nick, we probably got to something good. What is the good thing you were thinking
of? Well, I liked
of?
The idea of just them going after the Nostromo, which I thought was a cool, just, like, quick two-minute thing.
But you know what? That, like, comes... there was some time spent initially on a planetary surface.
I thought that was after, because they did the whole Nostromo to kind of, like...
Oh, I see what you're saying,
The wreckage of the Nostromo, and they get something.
Are we
going to
spoil this? Are we going to do this?
I think we're going to spoil.
Okay. This part isn't too big a spoiler. It's literally the premise of the movie.
Yeah.
So this is set between Alien 1
and
Aliens. And there is like a Weyland-Yutani crew, and there's like debris scattered over like miles and miles and miles because of they blew the shit out of everything.
Blew the shit out of
and what they find is this big hunk of rock. It looks like an asteroid or something like that. Not that big, but like a car-sized thing.
Yeah.
And it turns out it is the alien that was ejected out of the cargo bay. And it's still alive like a tardigrade that won't die.
Which is a new bit of lore that I think is pretty darn cool.
It like cocooned itself in space or secreted like sort of a like amber around itself and then just went into stasis.
That
is insane.
Xenomorph's resistance
you know
to things.
Throughout the movie, and I'm not going to say them all, but there were like three editions or so to the Alien lore.
Yeah.
And I remember when I was watching A Quiet Place Day One, I was like, they are so skimpy with their lore.
Yeah.
They do not live. They like, it's still basically these aliens that don't like loud sounds and that chase sounds.
Correct.
That's about it. We don't know what their motivations are. We don't know anything.
There was like a one tidbit in the
there was a tiny, tiny tidbit. But still a good movie, by the way.
Yeah.
but
in Romulus,
they actually dole out some ones, and I think I was generally into most of them. That was like,
cool.
Oh, that's a cool idea. Oh, here's something we haven't seen.
Yeah.
So, so yes, that gets taken back.
And then we cut to a colony on a planet,
yep.
And we meet a young woman and her...
Named Rain.
And her brother...
Yes.
Which is...
Well, you might think there's something a little bit different. They have different skin colors.
Yep.
And
his name is Andy.
And his name is Andy. He seems a little bit off, like he might...
a little bit on the spectrum.
He might be on the spectrum, or maybe has a learning disability or something like that.
Yep.
But if you know Aliens movies, you might be able to surmise what is in fact happening here.
Yeah, and I thought that was a cool addition to that kind of stuff. And
the explanation for him is an interesting one. And he actually ends up being, like, amazingly cast.
Yes. I don't know that actor, or if I do, I couldn't place him.
Yeah. He was the one who I thought was, like, turning in, like, some like, performance where I'd be like, should he be nominated for Best Supporting? Maybe.
It's possible.
But, so, they are living in, like, I'm going to say a capitalist hellscape of a mining colony.
Controlled by Weyland-Yutani.
Yeah. You have to, like, earn credits to get off-world, and they change the what you have to do to, the amount you have to do. On the fly, on a whim, to keep you there.
You thought you had enough.
Yeah, it's kind of you're lucky we're giving you any work at all, and it's a hellscape.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of young people there that have a notion that they could get up to, a ship in orbit.
Yeah, they come across the idea of a wreckage that is, like, coming into their atmosphere.
Right.
And will...
It's a cool ringed planet.
Collide into the rings and destroy itself. But
In
just a few days, they notice that there are...
The sleeper compartments.
Chambers.
Yeah, where they go into hypersleep.
Yeah, hypersleep chambers.
And they're like... And what's their notion to do? They want to get those.
They want to get those and get to a different planet that is free, essentially.
Yeah. Basically, like, you get some ship with the cargo containers and you just get out.
I thought this was a cool concept for an alien movie that we haven't quite seen before.
It's weird that for a movie that had so much, like, in some ways, you're still going to see the things you see in alien movies. But the staging of it was all in some such interesting ways, and those were actually all interesting characters, by the way.
And it was all done not in, like, the new style. It was done in kind of the 1970 alien models. So
that's the visual aesthetic. I will say it's filmed in, like, a modern style.
Yeah,
like, it's not slow like that first movie is.
But it felt like it was in continuity with the alien movies. You could just take the leap and, like, oh, yeah, this is exactly what this would look like.
Lots of practical effects.
A lot of practical
effects. All those kind of digital readouts and tech, like you saw in the original Ridley Scott movie, looked great.
Yep.
Looked great. And I don't think we need to dive too deep into where things go. I mean, you kind of know what's going to happen, but I can guarantee you don't know exactly how this comes about. And there are some great sequences in there. You know that early on sequence where, first of all, there's an interesting thing with sort of the gravity on the ship that they go to, which I won't dive too much into, but that's an interesting
gravity
issue.
Definitely, our pre-show included
it showed the OK Go video where they go in that plane where, you know, the plane dives and it creates zero G, and we were like, there must be something with zero G in this movie, and there was, and it was good.
It was the staging of all of, like, the typical alien events were different.
Yes,
and I was very, very surprised and very pleased.
It managed to create tension in sort of new ways that wasn't just like, oh, there's an alien loose in the room with us kind of thing. I think the characters all had interesting motivations, and even though there were some, like, they're not all the nicest of people.
Nope.
But some of them are pretty decent, and I think that's a good balance. These are characters mostly you can root for.
Yeah.
And they're desperate people for good reason. And so I found myself rallying behind them. Even the worst of them wasn't without some redeeming qualities.
But they were each given a motivation or a backstory that kind of you could infer a little bit more about them than your average alien.
Yeah. Well, you know, I always point to the movie Aliens as a perfect example of how you can sketch out a small group of characters, yeah, the Colonial Marines, in a short period of time where you're interested enough in their fates that they are not just faces or names.
Cameron did it perfectly.
And this also kind of has some of that to it. Rain and her brother Andy are mm-hmm. clearly the main characters, but it's an ensemble. I will say the last quarter, last third maybe, has some stuff where I was like, well, I wish they hadn't done that. some of that was like certain elements of greatest hits alien yeah. stuff. Like, wow, they really wanted to call out a lot of famous scenes. That's weird. And then a few things that are like those sort of Prometheus-type links.
There was one line in particular I kind of groaned at, and man, I wish they hadn't done it.
Wish they had not.
But...
but you know what? Like, it was a really good movie in a lot of ways.
Yeah. So I wish
it was a perfect movie, because, like, if they had nailed the ending, I would be like, oh my god, everybody go see this movie. And now I have to give a little warning.
I will still say, if you're an Alien fan, there's enough here that I think it's
100%
worth
like,
seeing.
Yeah, unless you... I was ready to stop watching Aliens movies, and I still liked it.
Yep.
So unless you have hated the Alien movies for all time, or definitely don't acknowledge anything past Aliens, you should watch the movie.
It's true.
I'm definitely gonna catch this. Knowing that both y'all liked it, even with some asterisks for yep. The tail end, that gives me... I've had several friends who are like, it's amazing, and so yep. I definitely want to see it. I'm gonna catch it.
It's worth it.
I have been listening to an audiobook series that a friend of mine, it is like her favorite book series, and so I started listening to it called Alana the Lioness.
It's like a YA fantasy series,
so,
right?
Yeah, so originally it was not YA. I guess the publisher decided to make it more YA.
Oh, interesting.
Came out in 1983 to 1988, is by author Timora Pierce.
Yep.
It is basically about a girl who, when she's like 10 years old, she and her twin brother, the boy is supposed to go to night school.
Right.
Not N-I-G-H-T, but K-N-I-G-H-T.
Right, it's medieval, yep. feudal kind of thing. And it's still fantasy world? Are there yes. dragons and stuff?
No, there's no dragons.
Okay.
There's magic, but there's no, like, dragons and creatures.
Okay, a heightened medieval world.
And it's very, very, there's a lot of nobles and knights and that kind of thing. It's a little bit like Camelot-y.
Yeah, okay.
But, so, she's supposed to go learn magic, he's supposed to go be a knight, he doesn't really want to be a knight. And so he gets sent off to go learn magic, and she poses as his twin brother,
right?
And goes to learn goes to the night school.
Yes.
From there, she starts out
She goes
from a page to a squire to a knight.
Yep.
And also, she happens to have like this healing magic that's like her gift.
Yep.
And so she is told by the woman, one of her teachers, who they have to let in on the secret, or otherwise she's not going to be able to go. She's like, look, I'm going to do this. And that the woman is like, you can't not use your gift. The gods punish people for not using their gifts and that kind of thing. So she becomes sort of a knight and also a healer. She becomes a friend and eventually a lover of the prince,
okay.
who's also in night school.
I like to call it Squire Academy.
They become friends with this guy who's like the king of the rogues.
Okay.
And she trains. So basically by the end of like book one, Alana is a full D&D party. It was the joke I made to my friend. She's she is a knight and a cleric and a mage and a rogue. and later on she adds monk.
Oh, wow.
But there's four books. The first two are sort of about her becoming, you know, having this group of friends around her, becoming a knight, eventually revealing her true identity.
Yep.
And then she, in the third book, she goes off to the Bajir, who are like these Bedouin-like nomads, and becomes like their shaman.
Okay.
And teaches their new shamans and that kind of thing. And then she goes back to another place. She goes to like an Arctic place to find this artifact in the fourth book.
Okay.
And it ties back into the old stuff. But I really like this. It's really interesting stuff, really good world building, really good characters. You know how fantasy can get a little dark?
Yeah.
This avoids a lot of that. Like, Lana definitely is challenged, but mostly it feels like the book is rooting for her.
Right, kind of a little more adventuresome and not quite grimdark.
Yeah.
So I read the first one of these years and years back, and I remember liking that first one it, you know, it was very notably from a female perspective and showing the difficulties of ins and outs of both her kind of, like, going through, like, kind of like her middle teen years, her puberty and all this, mm-hmm. as well as having to deal with this disguise and this deception and all yep. this. And I remember it was like pretty good at creating that world. But I didn't get to all of the sort of bigger adventure stuff that come in the later books, it sounds like.
Well, I guess it follows up with another quartet called the Immortals that focuses on a new character. And she has done like 17 or 20 books in this world.
Am I correct that there's like a graphic novel or something?
There's a graphic novel coming of Alana later this year. There's one coming out, The First Test, which is another series of books in this world.
Oh, okay. Yeah, wow.
But yeah, you know, as we've talked about, I'm not always the world's biggest fantasy fan.
Yep.
But I thought this was really good. I really enjoyed this, and I'm looking forward to read more of this world.
Okay, right on.
I would recommend it. Nick, you want to talk about Oddity?
Yeah. Speaking of spooky films, sometimes you don't need a movie that is like reinventing the wheel. Oddity doesn't reinvent the wheel, but it does a ghost story extremely well. It's a kind of an Irish horror film because it takes place in a kind of a mansion in the middle of nowhere.
Okay.
A woman is and her husband are renovating it. It opens with the wife there in the middle of the night, and she's renovating a part and has like a tent, and somebody knocks at the door who seems to be this manic person who may or may not have escaped from a mental facility, saying that he saw somebody when she was going to get something out of her car go inside the house.
Okay, that's crazy.
And it's just a really good opener. And then something happens to the wife. She dies. We don't see anything, though.
Right.
And it focuses on her twin sister, who is blind and has, like, psychometry powers.
Okay.
So she can touch objects and see kind of things that are... Whoa. Like,
I didn't know we were going to bring psychics into this.
Yeah. And she kind of wants revenge on the people... Whoever did this.
Okay.
And it's a really taut, very well shot, kind of very spooky, cool locations. Mm-hmm. It's just a story done very, very well. Hmm. And I kind of took a flyer on this, not expecting much, and I found myself to be kind of highly engrossed in kind of its weird story, and there is a thing in it that I don't want to spoil, but it's a...
What is it?
Is it an oddity?
It is an oddity from her... the blind lady has a curio shop.
Okay.
And it is something that she has had that she uses to get revenge, and it's really cool.
So the Necronomicon?
No, haunted, it's not the Necronomicon.
Haunted dummy.
You're on the right track.
All right. Let's stop guessing.
Full-size mannequin played by Kim Cattrall.
By the way, I was just about to say, I was looking it up while you're talking, and Rotten Tomatoes, it's at 96%.
Yeah.
It's with highly, 104 reviews, so...
It's definitely getting a lot of buzz.
But is this just like a Netflix movie or something?
No, I rented it off of Fandango at Home or whatever, but it's...
But I don't remember this coming out at theaters. Was it a theater movie?
I don't know if it was or not. I never saw it. But
or is this direct-to-video trash?
It is not direct-to-video trash. It is kidding. Not trash. It's one of my favorite horror movies from this season so far.
Yeah, no, your description of it made me want to check it out.
I highly recommend it. It'll probably show up on a streaming service eventually, but it's worth the $6 to rent it.
Okay.
It was great. And it doesn't have anybody that I recognize. It's... Which is kind of fun for a horror movie because you can kind of just go with the flow. Sort of like what Wreck did.
It can be more immersive.
Talk to Me was kind of like that, too.
It's just easy to be like, okay, like, these are just average.
Australians.
Yes, Australians. These are...
There is sometimes when you get a little bit away from like kind of pretty Hollywood celebrities, sometimes people do feel a bit more real, and it can be good casting for horror stuff.
Yeah. And a good opening is always good for horror, and that the idea of... Somebody saying they saw somebody go into your house while you're in the car.
That's super creepy.
You need to come out with me. And this guy is obviously like kind of, he's got wild eyes.
Yeah. It
can potentially be a bad thing too.
Yeah.
But I was like, I don't know what I would do in that situation.
And I follow the Betty Davis eyes.
So
that's an old song, y'all.
Yes, it is. I know.
I wanted to mention I watched Only Murders in the Building season 4, the first two episodes that are out.
Okay.
I've really liked this show. It is Steve Martin and Martin Short and Selena Gomez.
But they've progressively added a lot of cast. Like,
they've added a lot of extra cast. Yeah, so it's like basically the whole premise is these two older men, one of whom is a was a procedural star. Steve Martin played a actor.
Like a Dragnet.
He played a guy named Look. No, that's not called Lookwell. That's the Adam. Brazos.
Oh right, yes. Right.
So he was one of these, you know, hip detective type guys, mm-hmm. and he still thinks everybody loves him, even though he's basically sort of a forgotten star. Martin Short is like a big producer who did a lot of like big musicals and that kind of thing, and he's this eccentric weirdo. They've been friends.
Is it kind of his best days behind him?
Yes,
sort of
for both of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Selena Gomez is a young girl who lives in the building, and it turns out that like her aunt is actually, she's like subletting the apartment from her aunt. But they start a podcast when someone gets murdered in the building called Only Murders in the Building.
Sure.
Because they decide that's what they're going to cover.
Right. They were going to like, well, do we want to cover other murders? No, only murders in the building.
And it happens that there's been four of them so far.
Sure.
Sounds
like a bad building to live in.
As I watch this increasingly, though, they've built the character stuff around quite a bit. Steve Martin had, like, an estranged daughter. Martin Short had a romance with a character played by... God, what's her name? Big actress...
Meryl Streep?
Meryl Streep, thank you. She played, like, his love interest in season 3. Mm-hmm. Selena Gomez has had some... She's had a flirtation with another woman. Mm-hmm. And so they all have, like... They've done like 3 seasons of this podcast. They've had various things go on in their lives. Season 4 begins with the podcast getting picked up for Hollywood. They're going to make a movie out of it.
Yeah.
So they've cast people to play them.
Oh, man. It's getting into true meta
territory.
Molly
Shannon is the producer, and she's hilarious.
Uh-huh.
And the people they cast are Between Two Ferns guy.
Zach Galifianakis.
Zach Galifianakis is cast to play Martin Short's character. And Eva Longoria is Selena Gomez's character.
Sure.
And Eugene Levy is Steve Martin's character. So they are playing themselves against Steve Martin and Martin Short playing these other characters. There's a great bit where Martin Short's character does not know who... doesn't know who Zach Galifianakis is.
Yeah.
And so when they're introduced to people playing them... He's like, and who are you? And Zach Galifianakis is acting all very arrogant, and he's like, yeah, this is so... People try to between two ferns me. And he's like, between two what? What are you talking about? there's a great bit of playing off that little thing.
Thanks.
And another murder has happened related to Jane Lynch's character.
Okay.
And so they're sort of investigating that.
This is just an excuse for a bunch of comedians to...
I mean, the thing is, like, it's actually got a very strong story.
You've seen the show, right?
Yeah.
I've seen, like, an episode.
Oh, okay. So I've seen at least the first half of the first season or so and need to get back into it. So it's a comedy, obviously. But there is, like, some dramatic turns in any given episode or season, it seems like, right? Wouldn't you say that, Randy?
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, sometimes the characters get, like, there's some real depth to them and they've been
for sure.
pretty well defined... And obviously a lot of the magic is watching, like, two classic comedians like Martin Short and Steve Martin play off of each other, with Selena Gomez more than holding her own.
Yes.
Selena
Gomez does fantastic work against these two veteran comedians, and they're all great together. And
sounds like a really fun evolution of it, which you're describing.
Yeah, for sure. I would definitely recommend it.
Yeah,
I think
one of those things that I keep meaning to watch, but never...
Well, every season is only like 10 episodes. You can burn through pretty quick, especially Nick. You can burn through pretty quick.
Yeah.
Nick Paul Rudd was in last season.
Nick has Irish Horror to watch.
Yes.
There's no time for these people.
We're trying to burn through all of Scandal right now. So.
Oh, that's a lot.
Yeah, we're on
that's
season 5.
That's a lot of show. Yeah, that's a lot
or
of show.
Or maybe season 6. It is a lot of show. It's a lot of the same thing happening.
But anyway, if you have not watched Only Murders in the Building, I definitely recommend it. This new season is off to a pretty good start.
Cool.
All right, that wraps it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
Yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.